So, welcome, Paul, and three Bens, and Ian, and those online. So, we've come up to
Buddy Ian.
So, we've come to the class number 8 on the Discovering Buddhism module called All About Karma. So, we'll be speaking about that mostly tonight. So, karma is basically an action. It's an action done with intention. So you guys have all got an intention for being here. You have a purpose, a reason for being here. So we'll just sort of get comfortable in your seat. It's been sort of sitting with your back straight and shoulders relaxed. And I want you to think that all the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas are present right now, meaning we're surrounded by enlightened beings. And I want you now to bring to the forefront of your mind your intention for being here. And whatever that intention is, I want you to complement it with a wish to develop your wisdom and your compassion and every other skill you have, so that you can put an end to your own suffering and the suffering of others, and bring yourself and others into the highest state of happiness there is. So why do we wish to free ourselves from suffering and its causes and to have this highest happiness? Very simply, there isn't any sentient being who wishes even the slightest suffering. And everyone is not content with the happiness they have. So we've always been trying to be happy, we've always tried to avoid suffering, but we haven't done very well. But the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas have done very well. They've managed to abandon every cause of suffering so that they no longer experience suffering, and they've been able to develop every cause for happiness, so they always abide in a state of joyful peace. So we're going to rely upon the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, their teachings, them as a spiritual community, to help us overcome suffering and its causes, and to help us develop the highest state of happiness for the benefit of others. So please join me in taking refuge in the supreme objects of refuge, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I go for refuge, since I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So in response to this wish of ours, think that lights and nectars pour from the heart of the Buddha and they wash over you. And they wash away every cause for suffering and every obstacle to happiness. The body, speech, and mind feel light and empowered. You gaze around you, you see that all sentient beings are still experiencing suffering in some form. You understand it's because they still have aversion to their enemies, attachment to their friends, and they're still indifferent to strangers. So you make a wish that all of them have these four boundless thoughts and put them into action. May all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. So again, in response to this wish of ours, lights and nectars pour from the heart of the Buddha. They wash over us and over all the beings surrounding us. We find that our hatred, our attachment and our indifference are washed away, and the causes for them no longer remain. And these four immeasurable qualities are revealed to be the reflections of mind's nature, and now they are effortlessly manifesting. So possessing these four immeasurable thoughts and being in front of the refuge field, we recite the seven limb prayer. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and other spirits to the great enlightenment. Now, just in case we sort of cling to the merit, or we cling to the idea of self and being an intrinsically good person, and that we're doing intrinsically good actions, we're going to release this idea of clinging. And we can do that by offering a mandala. We think that this mandala represents everything good and bad about ourselves, the universe itself, and everything within it. And by making this offering, we will provide resources for ourselves in future lives, and that the clinging to the conceptions will vanish altogether. And in response to that, we'll have a place where we can teach others. I think this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this is a Buddha field and offered. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Iram Guru Raka Mandala Kamayataya. So I've released the mandala, and the Buddha has accepted it. And he smiles at us with delight, and we look up into his face, we look into his eyes, and we feel accepted and at ease. And then an emanation of the Buddha leaves his heart, and it moves through space and comes to rest above the crown of your head, facing the same direction you are. This emanation now begins to descend. It enters the crown of your head, comes down through your body, and rests at the level of your heart. And then its radiance begins to expand, filling your body and mind with light. Light goes out through the pores of your skin and begins to fill the 10 directions of space. And wherever there are beings who abide in space are touched by that light, they're utterly transformed into the fully awakened state. There's no difference between them and yourself. In fact, the idea of I and other has completely vanished, and so is the idea of inner and outer. There's just this vast lit up space, which is your mind. It's the deepest nature of mind. Completely free of all conceptuality, vast and open. Now the light begins to withdraw from the 10 directions of space, and it rushes towards your heart, enters your body, and abides at your heart. And you can feel the seat you're sitting on, and you know that you're breathing normally and naturally. you understand that this meditation was done purely on the level of imagination. Even so, it's left an imprint on your mind, a cause for this to take place in actuality. And this cause requires the conditions of engagement with this Buddhist path, acting in accordance with Buddhist teachings of karma, cause and effect, developing a mind of renunciation, bodhicitta, in the correct view. The thing about being here today, listening to these teachings, this is what you intend to do. You want to follow the teachings of the Buddha so that you can develop greater wisdom, greater compassion, and greater skills to help others become free from suffering and its causes. And you breathe in deeply through your nostrils. You exhale through your mouth. And in your own time, you allow your eyes to flutter open. And you move your body in whichever way feels natural to you. And you find yourself in the class or at home in front of the screen. Okay, so being the eighth class, we've studied quite a bit already. So we began to look at karma and the four principles of it. The four principles of karma are that happiness always comes from virtue and never non-virtue. And suffering always comes from non-virtue, never virtue. So they call this certainty of karma. Karma is certain, and this is what's certain about it. From good comes good. From the unskillful and the non-virtuous comes suffering. Another principle is that small actions can produce very large results, because that can be on the positive side or on the negative side. So karma increases. Third principle is that if you don't create the cause, you cannot experience the effect or the result. So every effect that you wish for, every result that you wish for, requires causes and conditions. And the Buddha explains those to us, and we need to adopt them and put them into our lives and see if this is the case. And finally, the causes that we create don't get lost. So in other words, if you do something, it's not the case that nothing's going to happen. And so karmic actions are never lost. Karmic seeds are never lost. So these karmic seeds or karmic causes create what we call non-virtuous paths and virtuous paths. Paths that lead to suffering and paths that lead to happiness. And basically these paths, the ones we've talked about, are related to the behaviors of our body, speech, and mind. So we have three actions of the, three unskillful and skillful actions of body, four unskillful and skillful actions of speech, three unskillful and three skillful actions of the mind. So these skillful paths are called the paths of restraint, which means so we decide I'm not going to kill, I'm not going to steal, I'm not going to engage in sexual misconduct, I'm not going to use harsh speech, idle speech, divisive speech, or lie. I'm not going to have a mind that's malicious, a mind that is envious or that has wrong views. You say, why not? You say, because it's going to produce suffering for me. So how does that suffering come about? Well, because we imprint our mind, we place either the seeds or the imprints on the mind. And if it's positive, that leads to positive outcomes, but if it's negative, it leads to negative outcomes. And so we talked a bit about that last week. And these seeds in particular leave what's called a throwing karma. In other words, it leaves the potential to throw you into some type of experience, in particular the experience of rebirth. And when we find ourselves reborn in some state, there are other things that happen to us. like for all of us here, we're all human beings. So we've been sort of, what they say, thrown into the realm of humanity. So here we are, we find ourselves here. The completing karma has to do with our resources, for instance, the different sort of things that will happen to us while we are humans, some of the experiences, the behaviours we engage in, and so forth. So we've gone through that, and I relied upon a number of different books. And the primary ones here are this, I'll say this when you're looking at it, the screen. So it's a book on the right.
Same on your printed page as the screen.
Okay. Book at the very top, on the right, Samsara Nirvana and Buddha Nature. The book directly below it by Geshe Sopa, Steps on the Path to Enlightenment. And then on the left, down the bottom, there's, I think it's called The Foundation.
Yeah, Buddhist Practice.
Buddhist Practice by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Tupten Chodron. So these three I've been going all the time over the last 6 weeks, 7 weeks. But these new, these other ones, the other three books, they're really to do with tonight. So we've got a book on the 35 Buddha practices, we've got a book on the medicine Buddha practice, and then we've got a book on Vajrasattva meditation. And all these three books concern purification practices. So just because we have in place seeds or potentials for suffering, it's not certain that that's actually going to take place. What's really certain is negative creates negative, positive creates positive. So we don't want to have the negative stuff take place for us, right? So we have to stop it. We have to hinder it in some way. And these practices called purification do that. I remember one of the things that Lama Zopa said was that if we do not engage in purification practice, we are mad. Right? It's like what he's sort of saying is, look, you know, by example, it's like this. So suppose you've done something very silly, you've harmed somebody, and they haven't responded yet. So there's two things that can happen here, isn't there? One is they can respond and they can either hurt you or not hurt you. What do you want to take place? A smart person would say, I don't want them to hurt me. Right? So you go, well, what, can I do something about that? And the answer is, of course you can. Even the slightest is the case, isn't it? We hurt people today, we think, well, I don't want to be hurt back by them. I don't want to face the consequences of this harm that I've caused them. Is there something I can do? The most simplest thing you can often do is just go and say, sorry. If you're even smarter than that, you might even bring them a gift of some sort. Yeah. So even in this world, it's like that. Right? We can avoid future suffering. It's the same sort of thing in terms of karma, cause and effect. It's just that the timeline is much more advanced. It's not just this life, it's future lives as well. So just like I said before, none of us wishes to experience even the slightest form of suffering. But if you actually, if that's really true and we really do want to avoid it, there are things we can do. And so that's what this class will be about today. And those three books in particular are focused on the different techniques you can use. And this here is a picture from one of those books, actually the bottom book on the Vajrasattva practice. That book's got about 60 different pictures in it, so it's terrific if you want to know what the visualizations look like. So let's have a look at what we're going to do today. We're going to look at, like I said, the practice of purification, and in particular four remedies. And within those four, there are many others as well, and a couple of other things we can do. For instance, the practice of merit and rejoicing, and in particular the importance of patience. And the Buddha said, and he's speaking to Maitreya, who is another great bodhisattva, and actually ahead, one of the lineage holders of all the method techniques. The Buddha said, Maitreya, when a bodhisattva, a great being, possesses these four teachings, non-virtuous actions that are performed and accumulated will be overcome. What are these four? They are the power of remorse, the power of the antidote, the power of turning away from faults, and the power of the basis. So in relation to this, His Holiness the Dalai Lama said, and this is from the foundation of Buddhist practice, which I think you've got right there, Ben. He says, first, learn to accurately assess your actions. Accept responsibility for your misdeeds, admit them and regret them. Strong regret is the key to purification. For without it, there is no motivation to counteract the future negativities. So regret is not guilt. So do not despise yourself, thinking that the more you berate yourself, the more you atone for your misdeeds. Try to understand how you became involved in these unskillful actions by reflecting, was my interpretation of the situation accurate, or was it skewed by my self-centeredness? What was my motivation? And how were my body, speech, and mind involved in this action? In fact, do I engage in this action often? And am I happy afterwards? Then contemplate, using your Dharma knowledge, how you could think about and deal with a similar situation should it happen in the future. Such in-depth reflection will help you to uncover destructive emotional, verbal, and physical behaviors. And by understanding them, we can begin to change them. A nice tone, isn't it? I mean, it's reasonable. That's what I really like about that particular sequence of books. They're very reasonable and it's nice writing style. So these four opponent powers, I've just put them up here. It was called the first one being remorse or regret. Sometimes even called eradication. Then there's a remedy, which I call applying remedies, restraint, turning away from the faults, and a refuge, the foundation. These are the actual four actions you need to engage in to purify past unskillful behaviors. So this word remorse, like regret. Now the two most important ones there are the first and the third. And in fact, all of them really hinge on the first one. But it's one and three that really decide whether purification practice is actually taking place.
I suppose if you don't have remorse, then none of it will work anyway.
That's right.
Not even recognizing anything's happened.
Now, so I've written them up here like this, so we're going to. And I'll show you the next slide the way I present it again. But I just want to let you know, it's not always in this order. So, you know, we had the books up there. There was the 35 Buddha practice, there's the Medicine Buddha practice, and there's the Vajrasattva practice. Right? So in those books, the order is different.
Well, it's refuge first, isn't it?
Yeah, in many of them, especially the 35 Buddha practice, you start off with refuge. So please, when you see that, don't think there's something wrong or anything. I just think it was a skillful way of the teachers presenting it, and it will work whichever way you present it. So Geshe Sopa says from his Steps on the Path to Enlightenment, if you practice these four powers to counteract negative karma, there is no non-virtuous action that cannot be purified. Even if you have committed great negative actions, like killing your parents, trying to kill a Buddha, or drawing blood from a bodhisattva or an enlightened man, destroying the spiritual community. These are really heavy things to do. To pass yourself off as an enlightened being, perhaps, or way ahead on the path when you're definitely not. These are, from a Buddhist perspective, very heavy negative behaviors. They can all be purified. So if you have enough time and energy to apply these opponent powers seriously and intensively, even very grave negative potentials can be destroyed completely. And even if you are not able to destroy a karmic potential from the very root, you can at least suppress it so it's not able to bring its results soon. Or else you can mitigate it so its result is very mild. So as you can see, there are many different levels at which this practice can be effective. The point is to interrupt the ripening of the harmful results. Now, for for myself at least, it's very difficult to remember how many unskillful things I've done and what they were. And it might be the same for yourself. I mean, I'm nearly 70, some of you are over 50, and there's others. But if you look back and I say, okay, so how many unskillful bad behaviors have you done? And you probably go, oh my God, well, I can remember three or four. Right? So you've done three or four bad things in your life. And you go, no, they're just the ones I can remember. And they're probably really bad, aren't they? Right? And that's what we do, remember the really bad ones. So if that's the case with yourself, then purify the real bad ones as soon as possible. Because you do not want to die with that on your mind stream. Because one of the things that can happen at the time of death is you remember it. And you don't want that to happen. You do not want to die with a mind that's absorbed in negative stuff. If you've got stuff you can remember back, do it now, start now, and start getting rid of it. And from my perspective, just as you guys and myself, I can't remember too much about this life in terms of the negativity stuff. I've forgotten most of yesterday already. And so then I go, well, I guess I've forgotten what's happened most of all the previous lives too. So when you, it's like that, then just be safe with yourself. Say, I could have done anything. I probably did. So I need to purify it all, whatever it is. I want to purify it because it could come back up and bite me, and I don't want that to happen. So that's why it's so important to engage in these powers.
Kate asked, do you have to continue to purify the same ones?
Well, that depends. And maybe you'll see the answer towards the end, Kate. Oh, the value for Kate. But she's right here. Okay, so let's have a look and see how using these four actually purifies stuff. What's the process? So we're going to take an action, right, and see how these four opponent powers purify that action. So if you take anything that exists, even one thing, like one action, you can be so sure of yourself that it's made up of parts. There isn't anything that exists without parts. So even one action has parts. And often they've got a whole lot of them, but here we just need to concern ourselves with four of them. And they are the part that comes up when the action finishes. So for instance, suppose you want to steal something.
Someone's
brolly from the outside. This is a really nice brolly, it's got a great handle. In fact, my shoes are out there, they're beautiful. You want to steal them. So you leave the class early and you pick them up and you shoot down the driveway with them, right? Wouldn't you be happy? No?
Yeah.
You've got what you wanted. Of course you'd be happy. So you take something to feel guilty. You would take something to feel guilty. Then you'd leave it, I think. That's this thing. So in terms of stealing, what culminates the act of stealing is the sense of I've got it, right? And you're happy because you've got it.
The time that happened to me was getting the wrong change in the shop and getting an extra $20 note in there, and then they didn't notice, and then I put on my cup and I walked out of the shop and went, yay, I got it, so there you go.
Yeah, like that. That's right, just something like that. So the act of stealing here is finished. That was the culmination of it, a sense of joy. So the culmination always refers to the end of the action. The action is finished. But as you can see, every action demands, you've got to perform the action. So an example to the shoes is like you've actually got to sort of like pick them up. Right? You've got to take them without asking. Because stealing is you take something without permission from it. It belongs to someone else and you haven't asked them for it. You've taken it without permission. So you've picked it up and it's a little bit just like with Miffy too. The performance was, you know, the person who freely offered the money to Miffy was a mistake. And she could see it was, and she went, oh, keep it. I've got 20 bucks more. Right? So that's the performance. It's in her hand, and she's got it, and she puts it in her pocket and walks out the shop. Before that was the attitude. So as you know, before the attitude's made up of these different parts. So one of them is you have to actually identify those are the shoes I want, or that's 20 bucks. So you clearly know that's the thing there. I want it, I'm going to keep it, I'm determined to keep it.
If you didn't notice the discrepancy and the change, then you wouldn't have that attitude of doing the negativity, would you?
No, that's right. So here, what I want you to do is just go along with this and not hop in and go, but what about this and what about that, right? So we're just going to go like a completely wrong action here called stealing in this case. Yeah? Okay, so there's always an attitude when you steal something. There's always an attitude going, like whatever you sort of do, there's a motivation. Like in this one, the thing is like,
extra money,
right? And I'm going to keep it. And then there is a basis. So the basis here is the money or the shoes, the things that's going to be taken. Sometimes the basis can also refer to the person who you're going to take it off.
The owner.
Because, you know, it'd be much more serious if you suppose if you take the Prime Minister's shoes and run down the road to mine. It'd be in a much more bigger trouble.
Shoes.
Yeah, that's right. So you can have this difference in the basis. So if they're all in place, right, now we have a complete action. So that's what we imagine here. We've done a complete action. So what we want, and we know that once that's happened, it's going to bring about an effect later on. So in Miffy's case, if the person noticed the 20 bucks and quickly come around the counter and chased her down the road and said, oi, oi, that's one of the effects. And for mine, if you know, next week you walked in with my shoes, you're a silly thief. You won't find me coming out and having a conversation with you. So there's an effect that follows. And you know, think, well, is the effect going to be pleasant or unpleasant? Well, because the cause was negative, the effect is likely to be unpleasant. So you know that. So the idea, and why do we want to purify? We do not want to experience that unpleasant effect. As you know, there are three major forms of unpleasant effect. One of them is a rebirth. The other is that, related to that rebirth, is that you find yourself in an environment that's really unpleasant also. And then suppose you don't find yourself in the unpleasant rebirth, but you find yourself back here as a human being after your death. There are experiences and behaviors that are concordant with your action. So you might find you keep stealing, like I did at one stage, you get away with it. You know, and you go, wow, that was easy. And so you keep stealing. That's one way, but the other thing that might happen to you...
you don't have enough money to get your shoes resold.
Yeah, that's right. You have this experience of being in poverty. You find that your things are taken. So, you know, you go, well, look, it's not worth it, is it? Just a pair of shoes or 20 bucks, and now I've got all this trouble. You go, no, I don't want that trouble. So I need to do something about it. And the thing that you do is apply these four opponent powers. And each of the powers is related to one part of the action. And I hope you'll see this is quite clear, I think. So the first thing is like remorse, which goes against the joy. You know, the sense of satisfaction that you've done something. So going, oh my God, you know, straight off, it just goes against it. So and this is why remorse is so important.
Here it's quite different. The remorse from, say, just getting caught doing it, it's really, it's the karmic remorse.
Karmic, well, we have a remorse for the karma, not just society and values and the things of everyday life. Of course, all that type of suffering is there too. Right? But then there's other forms which we're not so aware of. Like, for instance, so you might get caught for stealing my shoes, or Miffy might get, you know, put up resistance about giving the money back, and we find ourselves in court in this life, right? It's a problem. It's not a real big problem, but I'm not even embarrassing and everything. You know, and then you sort of walk out, and that's it. You think the karmic stuff is still going on. That's just one part of the result. And we often think, well, that's it. I've done my time. I'm good to go. Yeah, I know. But you're not. There's other things that could happen to you. So remorse stops you having experiences similar to the cause. So what is the cause for taking the shoes, taking, keeping the money? What do you think?
Greed.
Yeah, sort of, it's a sort of a poverty mentality, eh? What do you, a sense of attachment. Attachment's driving it, greed, a sense of lack. So this means that suppose you find yourself reborn later on as a human, or even just in this life, your thing is, I don't have enough. I need more.
Or all your stuff is just stolen all the time.
Right. Yes, that's right. Or then you find others steal your stuff. So you've got a mental experience, but then you also find your stuff gets stolen. Or that you can't seem to accumulate wealth. You can't seem to accumulate possessions. Or whatever you do, they get broken somehow. And so I don't think anybody wants that to happen to them. But so this remorse purifies or stops that type of experience from taking place. Now, in terms of the performance, the actual taking something that wasn't given to you, wasn't freely given, you have to come up with some sort of revenue to it. So one of the simplest things to do is you see the person again and say, I'm really sorry I did that, I just lost my mind. I'm sorry. You know. Or you could, next time you see them, you bring it, you know, the person comes back, I've got my shoes back, but then they come back with some sort of voucher or something to go, here's this wonderful shoe polish for you, Eddie. Or here's a pair of slippers to go with those shoes, I'm so sorry, hope you forgive me. Yeah, mate, you're right. Right? There's some way of making recompense. A remedy.
So in a way that's doing a good deed to counter the negative deed.
That's right, yeah.
So it that's overlays right. It.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So you've got two really opposing things there. I hope you can see that. Ben, yep.
Does it have to be the same?
No.
So it can even be really general. So say the shoes, you donate to, you know, shoes being sent to refugees or something. It can be a generic.
It could be so many different things you could do. I mean, you could offer $20 to a charity for people's eyes. Yeah, you could save an animal or something. There's so many different, and we'll come to that because that's the largest part of the teaching diet, the remedies. Yeah, you want to purify that, this particular type of action. And what it does, what it stops the effect is the throwing karma. So the throwing karma is like the impetus or the energy that will, they say, like, will throw the seed into the result, which will be, in this case, is the fruition, the lower realm rebirth, which is the worst thing that can happen to you. That's what I'm saying, like, if you know you've done some silly things through your life and it's still on your mind stream, you still think about it occasionally, deal with it. Because that's the energy, right? It's still there. And we know it is. So we don't want to actually like produce something. we want to stop all that. Ben? No, because the restraint has to do with the attitude.
Yeah, restraint or resolve is a mental attitude.
Yeah, that's right. So restraint, resolve has to do with this attitude, right? So, and the attitude has to be, I'm not doing that again. So why not? Because we know the suffering is going to produce for us. And we don't want suffering. So we're not going to do it. And this really purifies the behaviors similar to the cause, right? Because that was, in other words, you're saying, well, I'm not going to keep stealing. Stealing produced this effect for me. Man, I don't know. It's a bad effect. You know, it's like that idea, because you told these stories before, and you know, so I was a little bit of a run around when I was a kid. And one of the things I did, I used to like stealing comics. I couldn't stop myself. Loved comics. You know? Of course, one day I got caught. You know? And, oh man, they took me up to the police station. You know, like the guy held my ear and twisted it, walked me through town. It was really embarrassing, right? And then they take me up there and then they ring my father up, right? Oh man, then my dad comes down to the police station. And of course, him and the police officer agree that I should get a good whacking because I'm a thief. Right? So that's what the cop does, right? Bang, over the ear. A big merry cop, right? And then they tell me off, right? You're bloody going to jail and all this sort of stuff. It's like, oh my God, I had no idea. I just took a comic. But this heavy thing happened. You know? That was enough for me for a long, long time. So I met a professional thief. But for most of my life, that's another story. But for all my life as a kid after that, I wasn't taking any more comics. I wasn't taking anything. Because I remember if you get caught, it's terrible. So I'm resolved. I'm not doing that behavior again. I'm not stealing again. So this resolve here, this works against the attitude bend of, you know, the poverty attitude, right? I just take it. And finally, we have what's called the basis. So here we have to rely upon something else. So what do we need to rely upon? Well, here it's the truth, the Buddha's teachings. So we rely upon an authentic teacher of the truth. We rely upon the teachings that show us these are the effects of stealing. It's not just problematic in this life and you might be taken down to the jailhouse. You might also take rebirth in these terrible places. You find that you might not be able to stop stealing, which does happen to people who get away with it often enough. That's what they do, don't they? They keep stealing. You might also have this sort of poverty mentality, or find that your own goods are stolen all the time. So in fact, many years later, before I even came here, like one time, you know, the house I was living in was burgled and people stole my stuff. And I actually took the view, like, it's okay, it's like fair whack, because I did the same to other people. I mean, that's only right, you know? But believe me, other thieves that I've been with never thought like that. I'm very upset. And I'm still looking at them going, but hey guys, this is what we're doing. So if we can rely upon the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, and the mind of enlightenment in particular. Mind that goes, I don't want to hurt anybody. I actually want to bring them happiness. So, you know, stealing things, I won't do that. So we've got two sort of different things here, isn't it? One where we don't care about the other, one where we do care about the other. The mind of enlightenment is focused on the well-being of others. And the mind that is set on stealing is definitely not. It doesn't care about the other, it takes what it wants, right? Self-grasping, self-cherishing. So mind, beloved, cherishing others. completely against. So you see as you go through this, how each one is a complete opposite of the other. And the reliance, of course, takes care of what's called relying on the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha and the mind of enlightenment will stop you taking rebirth in the lower realms, the worst fruition. And of course, if it's stopping that, then you're going to find yourself, but you're not in the environment of the lower realms. And suppose you didn't take that rebirth there, but you found yourself again as a human being, then you don't find yourself in an environment where your things are stolen. Or you find it very difficult to have resources. So I'll just pause here and there goes Ben. Oh, what have you got? Yes, Ben? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so the room is like the counter to the performance of it, Ben.
Yes.
Yeah. So one simple way is like this is like thinking, as a counter to my stealing those shoes, I'll do this for you. Right? So you do an action. Right? So that counters the other action. Whereas the other one is actually countering
the wish to do it again. And they're quite different.
They're quite different. One's really psychological and the other is could be anything.
And we just know, like, psychologically, if you say sorry to someone, then you do have an interest to want to do something good to outweigh. It's like an upgrade, isn't it, of the negative thing.
So the restatement has gone, I'm not doing that again. That's the decision. I am not going to do that again. The other one is, what can I do for you? This is what I want to do for you. So the two sort of, you know, one's on the positive side and the other one's just holding ourselves back. Not doing it. So let's go through these in a little bit more. So we'll go through in a little bit more detail so we can ask questions again. So we begin with remorse or, you know, regret. But like I said, to feel remorse or regret strongly, you have to become familiar with the effects of the action, in particular those three karmic effects. So don't just think of the effect of this life. And that's what most people do. They mostly think of, oh, the effect on the other person. This is about the effects are going to take place for you. It's not about eyes, the action. Yeah. It's the action that produces the results. So it's just pointless sort of thinking, bad me.
Is there not like kind of a danger of remorse to guilt and then you carry that guilt with
you? Yep, and that's what we're saying.
Yeah.
So we're looking at the action, not me, the person.
Okay.
And that's, just for them, sort of make this division here. It's not, we turn our mind at us, it's not, we shouldn't be going, oh, I am this, I'm so stupid, which is a natural thing to do. But we're saying, no, you're not. It's the action that's going to produce this result.
Because then you can separate.
That's right, yeah.
Whereas if you think you're a bad person, you feel like
you're not. That's right. It's just not true either here. Yeah. It's just that the thing is like, you know, one is like, this action that I did is going to produce a number of different effects. And these effects are going to hurt me. So what good does it to do to go, oh, stupid me, and at the very same time, we're going to get hurt again. It's not useful. And it's completely mistaken as well. You know, because we engage in these unskillful actions because we're not in control of ourselves. So if we're going to blame anything, we should be blaming the thing that's in control of us. What's that? That karma. It's karma that's driving us to steal, to do all these silly actions, karma and affliction. They're responsible. We're like in the grip of karma and affliction. If we had any control over ourselves and thought, wow, this is what's going to happen to me if I do these unskillful actions, wow, I'll go ahead and do them. I don't think so. We have control of our body, speech and mind. We just go, whoa, no, obviously not. Well, of course you should feel that. But see, the thing, if the thing goes there, what you really should feel very bad for yourself rather than the other, because there's no certainty at all that you'll hurt them. But so, like I said, so one time, like, you know, when the house was broken, so they took the stuff, it didn't bother me too much. But you might be going down the road and go, oh, poor Eddie, blah, blah, blah. Well, Eddie's not feeling it at all. In fact, one time, as I said, I lost those really expensive sunglasses. I went back and someone had taken them. And immediately it was like, great, now someone can wear these great glasses that I've had. Right? So you might feel really bad about that, but I don't.
But sometimes it is, it's only when we actually notice, oh, I've hurt others, that we stop our behaviour.
Yeah, this is not the thing driving here. Karma's personal stuff that's going to happen to you. But, you know, so you go, oh, okay. Oh, the poor Eddie doesn't have his glasses and all this stuff, and no shoes, you know. But the result for you is lower realm rebirth. Who experiences the most suffering here? That's right. It doesn't do anything for you to stop the effects that are going to happen to you.
Actually, if you're not thinking about the karmic effects for oneself, and you just look at how much you hurt others, that can tend to just lead into guilt, can't it?
Yeah, it usually does. Yeah, but it's about this I. So that's what they say, that you've got to look at the effect of the actions and go, I don't want that effect, for sure. But what we often see is the effect that we think will take place for the other. So sometimes we're correct, it does hurt the other, be a great deal. So yes, they are suffering. And then you might feel bad about that. Well, okay, that's great, but thing is, it doesn't, so what's, but you got even worse to come.
So the compassion for others, though, that comes in later on in the process.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very muffled, Ben. I can't sort of make out what you're talking about here. A strong attitude of aversion, renunciation, and opposition directed toward negative karmas you created. Right? So again, the focus is on the action, but we go to the person, the other person. It's the action, and the external thing. It's this action that's going to, you know, that's where the problems come from. You created the action. He says, if you lack this first power, the remaining three powers will be weak and ineffective. Now, so, yeah, one, the other thing I was going to say, Ben, is, you know, so, if you've taken refuge, so I'm really speaking here from the point of view of Buddhist practice, right? Not just for ordinary people. This is about people on the Sangha. So if you go, okay, so now I've committed myself to becoming enlightened for the sake of others. And now I've stolen something deliberately from others, or I've done something unskillful, and it's hurt others. Okay, they've been hurt. What have you done to you, to yourself? Well, this intention that you have to become a Buddha for their sake, you just knocked that on the head. You just went completely against it. That's going to hinder your progress towards enlightenment. That is much, much worse than the suffering that you cause this other person deliberately. That's terrible. Oh, yeah. So, but you know, Buddha Dharma is.
It feels like
you look after yourself. Well, it's not. You have to look after yourself. You have this intention. If you don't look after yourself, how are you going to become enlightened? And you are looking after, you know, one of the ways that the best way to look after yourself is don't do it. That's what they said, you know. That's where we start. Don't kill, don't steal, don't do all these things. That's how you look after yourself. But once you have done it, now there's this action out there that's going to harm you even more.
I think that the biggest difference with this is a real U-turn in your mind that we're not talking about the external actions, and that's all the things that we do and say in the world. That's what we're so dominated by. But this is about the karma, which is hugely more long-term.
So the action has been done, right? But the effects haven't followed yet. We know what the effects could be. That's the thing. It's like, whoa, man. That, if I don't do something about that effect, I'm in a lot of trouble. You know, so knowing that, you go, I've got to do something about the effects. So one of the things, like if you have hurt someone, and then of course you go and say sorry to them. And yes, that puts their mind at ease, but that's very good for you too. But for most people who have suffered, suffering small for them in terms of lives, it's monstrous for you. As your karma increases, what could happen to you could be over again and again and again and again. It doesn't happen that way for them, right? It happens for you though. So, it's... So we've got to do something. So it's just like any virtuous act performed for the purpose of purification constitutes an opponent force. And like I said, there are heaps of them. So here we're going to look at brief at six of them that Shantideva offers. So reciting, studying, contemplating the profound sutras. So we have here the Heart Sutra, the Diamond Cutter Sutra, they're very brief, easy to do. We have the Sutra of Golden Light, we have the Sutra of
Sangata
Sutra. Yeah, remember the other, I don't know if you're here, but remember that great line? Whoever recites even four lines from this verse, right, from the Diamond Cutter Sutra. So there are four lines in there all of us should memorize.
But even if we just recite them.
If you just recite them, yeah. If you have it there, you go, great, now let's pull it out, I can recite them. But if you remember, then you can just straight away, you don't need to go and look for the book. You've got it, right? Oh my gosh. So I've got to think, wow, all conditioned phenomena, an act of stealing is a conditioned phenomena, the effects are conditioned phenomena. So, wow, all conditioned phenomena. Things just like stars, visual aberrations, flame of a lamp, magician's illusion, a drop of dew, a bubble in water, a dream, flash of lightning in a summer cloud. Done. Especially if you have remorse. It's not just you just go, well, I'm done. It's like, no, you know there's terrible consequences here. I need to have remorse for what I've done, and I need to put in place a remedy. So put in place the remedy. Profound sutras. And the best of all causes is emptiness. Now, probably for most of us, for myself, no perceptual realization of it, but you did get a sort of a general realization of it in terms of your learnings. And if you don't, like I said, get something from the Diamond Cutter Sutra or the Heart Sutra, any of them. Remind yourself that all phenomena are empty and don't have this intrinsic nature. Recitation, so you can recite mantras. So most of you probably know the mantra of Avalokiteshvara, Om Mani Padme Hum. So that's an antidote. You know, it's based, if you look at Mani Padme Hum, it's really based on compassion. It's got all the stages of the path to enlightenment. There you go. Worship, so there's a student here, Helene, who makes all these wonderful art pieces. So you can make Buddha images and statues, create altars and shrines, little stupas or monasteries.
Or come to our sip and paint.
Yeah, that's right. And you do it. That's right. There's a as a remedy. Images make offerings to the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, and in the names, so like you could recite the names of the different Buddhas, the names of the 35 Buddhas in particular. It's one of the great, that's why they do it, you know, that's how you purify. The name of your guru.
What kind of medicine
would
a preacher recite the names of each of the medicine
gurus? Yeah, so you've got lots of ways. So again, a little bit more in depth. The profound sutras, like I said, the Prajnaparamita, meaning Heart Sutra and Dhammakaya Sutra in particular. Read them. Try and retain some meaning. Like I said, so I just memorize that verse because every time I hop up here, you've got to do that. You know, you look out at the audience, you go, yeah, I'm looking at all these conditioned phenomena. I need to remember, they're just like stars, visual aberrations. So that's what the lamas often do when you hear them do their Tibetan, they're reciting that, or a homage to the Buddha.
And so each of these sutras actually have their own website online, and when you do the recitation, you can put it into the world map of where your recitation was done and add it to this incredible net of light. And also there are links for having the oral transmission, so that's where you listen to the sutra being recited and you imagine as each word is entering into you, so then when you go to recite it, it's much more powerful.
And so when you do this, you bring to it the mind of enlightenment. So it's, like you said, the sin of the selfishness. You go, no, I'm doing this for you, for the other. And then you both benefit. Explain the sutras. You can come and tell me that my shoes were empty. So, Eddie, don't worry. What's your problem? And the praise of these sutras. Now, emptiness. So, emptiness is, like I said, to comprehend the reality in which there is no self nature. So in other words, in the phenomena that we're trying to purify have no self nature. They dependently exist. And if they had a self nature, we couldn't purify them. But because they do exist dependently, then we can obviously purify them and ourselves. To comprehend the reality which is luminously clear means that your own nature of the mind has always been clean and clear, and none of the negative stuff you've done has ever penetrated the mind. Ever. To have a conviction, the mind has always been this way.
Primordially,
right from the very get-go, it's never been tainted. And then to have the confidence and conviction that emptiness is the ultimate mode of being. So again, this just requires a bit of study and you become quite familiar with it, and you'll see what it is. Whatever's dependently existent is empty of inherent existence. Recitation. So, as you know, in the Vajrasattva Sadhanas, there's a long mantra and there's the short mantra. So, and, you know, you do it 21 times or 7 times or so forth.
And so, on our website, in the resources section, there's a little bit called Practice Along, and there are really short meditations on Vajrasattva towards the end that you can do, as well as Tara and Venusandura Pujas. Bhajrasattva
one is
probably the most useful and directly specific to this.
And so this is where this concern, the natural thing is to do what you've been saying, Ben, right? Is to be really concerned for the other. Now, when we do these practices, it is for the other. The thing is, what we do, we benefit. So of course, in the same way that when you've done something wrong and you go and apologise to the other to sort of ameliorate their pain, we benefit too, don't we? Just by saying it. But as you know, sometimes apologies are not accepted, or the person has died, or you never see them again. So now what are you going to do? So this is a really skillful way of doing it. And you know, in your own mind you're going, I'm engaged in, I'm a bodhisattva vehicle, man. This is not just about me, this is us. And you don't know, but I do. So, I'm engaged in this practice for your well-being.
And
You just put them first and you benefit anyway. And I see, so you've got these different practices. We do Tara here, we do Medicine Buddha, occasionally Vajrasattva. Worship, make offerings. So you can, like I said, you come and you can offer fruit, flowers, anything you like.
Now there was a question right at the beginning of the class. Mandy was asking, what's actually meant by offerings? Are they monetary service to others, giving clothing, housing? We say make offerings, what's meant? And also, do we dedicate all that we've given as offerings when we do our dedication at the end of the day? So we made our offerings, then do we dedicate having made offerings as well?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yep. So we can make offerings to the images of the Buddha, we can make offerings to stupas, this could be clothes, money, food, whatever, flowers, offer clothing or brocade to a statue of the Buddha, offer gold leaf, offer water. So it's all okay. Then in terms of the images, create representations of the holy body, speech and mind. So you can create images of the Buddha, of the bodhisattvas, make satsas or statues, create tankas.
So does that also include, say, donating to the statues being made? So you're not actually directly creating it?
No, on the other side, the worship one, yeah, but not this one, but the other one, yeah. And then we come to the names. So recite the names or the mantras of the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. You could also recite the names of your own root guru or guru if you have their name mantra. So you can see there's a lot you can do. Like I said, the major thing that makes it is your attitude. It's the mind that is going to make the difference. You know, so we know we've done something silly, we have remorse for that because we understand the major suffering to be experienced is by us, and of course the other is suffering. So then we need to do something, and whatever we do, it's for them, right? And we benefit. And then we've got to go, I'm not doing it again. You have to restrain ourselves. And this, you know, strong attitude, strong conviction not to do it again. And like for me, I found it like it works, not when I focus on the other, but on me. Because when I say to myself, man, like you're a teacher of the Buddha Dharma, you've taken all these vows. And yet you've crossed them, you've transgressed them. Like, what sort of practice is that? Don't you know that that hurts the center? You know it hurts other people? Well, I just have a talk like that. You go, okay, I screwed up, and I have, but I'm not, like, you have a chat to yourself like that, which is all true. That's like a huge thing to go, don't do it again. And it's a nice thing, because when you go to do it again, if you did, all that self-talk will rise again. Because you've got to convince yourself, I'm not doing it again. Buddha's not going to come along and go, however, the Dharma protectors might. You might find yourself falling down the stairs.
This one's particularly important, say for dealing with addictions, because you can be really aware how over and over again you hurt your friends and family and everybody, and that's not enough to stop you. There comes a point where you realize, oh my gosh, it's me. I'm harming myself. And that's all I'm bringing on myself is suffering. And then you can bring the restraint in.
Yeah, see, and that's like the first one, remorse. Yeah. You know? Like, I'm going to really screw my life up. But, you know, like you might find that, some people have found it really works if they focus on someone else, like their family. Because for them, they don't care much about themselves. They need something else. And then that's enough to go, okay, that's enough. Because depending upon how strong you are, you might not be able to do it forever. So you could be, you know, you could probably say, for certain, since I am sort of in a remorseful state of mind, I won't be doing it in the next hour. So you could say, right, so you could be really certain that's going to be done for the hour. And of course, it's really quite good actually if you can actually put a small amount of time and do it like that, and then they'll do it for the same amount of time, again and again and again and again. The small things are really doable, but big things, it's like, yeah, maybe, maybe not. So you just sort of forget that sounds all nice to yourself, but it might not be very realistic. And so that really depends upon how deep your remorse is. If you have very deep remorse, then the restraint comes easy. But if it's not, if it's just words out of your mouth, and I'm never going to do that again, well, then you go, well, maybe not, you know, maybe just. And that's what I say, the first question about purification. How many times do you have to do it? Well, that depends on you, the strength of the remorse, right? And the strength of this promise of restraint.
You can really see how everything hinges on that remorse.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Which leads us to the refuge, right? So, like I said, the three jewels of refuge and bodhicitta are, you know, they're called the basis or what we can rely upon. So, in terms of that, yeah, look, there's a lot to remember when we talk about the refuge and why it why you can depend upon it. Because, like Buddha, if we just go, we're relying on the historical Buddha, that's not going to hold up. So we've got to look at, like what do you mean by Buddha? So one thing you should remember is the potential that your mind has to be free of every type of affliction and to be fully developed. And the nature of mind itself. If you know that, it's like, man, it's like, of course. Of course it's all workable. Like if I said to you, look, okay, if you think you're so bad, what have you done? So you tell me, okay, and that's going to be a cause for your future suffering, isn't it? Go, yeah, 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 that's I'm so frightened. Where is it? Is it mental or physical? You got to go, well, it's not physical, it's mental. Yeah, right. So it could only be where? On the mind. Not because it's mental. Tell me where your mind is. And that's exactly right. Right. It's always been like that. So you have to sort of like do this analysis and look, and then you have confidence in it. You know, that's what I'm relying upon, Buddha. And this intention to do no harm, bodhicitta. Right, so we've got to keep coming back there. See, we've got the two there, ultimate reality, conventional reality together. It's all there. Now, when we do particular things, so negativity is, like I said, the 10 unskillful behaviors, you know, killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, those ones there. In general. So these are all purified with those with what we've just been talking about. But there are other things called our downfalls. So this is when if you've perhaps taken particular vows, like the bodhisattva vow or the tantric vow and so forth, or even the vows of mind training. So then there you have to do something else about that. So they're purified in the specific ritual that conformed to how you took the vow. Well, you have to do something very similar to that. And then that's how you purify.
It's like in the ordinary world too, like if you break your marriage vows, then people later on, they retake their marriage vows.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. In a very similar type of ceremony. That's right. Yeah, yeah. That's exactly right. Now purification is so important because what you certainly don't want to happen to yourself is to find yourself, well, all of us are going to find ourselves dying at some stage, and then we're going to be dead, and then after death something else is going to happen. And when that something else happens, you do not want it to be involved with the lower realms. You don't want, you do not want to wake up looking out through the eyes of a possum or a dog or a snake or some creature under the sea, or being a hungry ghost or in the hell realms, right? Because if you do, you've wasted this life. This life has been wasted. It didn't matter what you did here. You blew it. So we do not want that. You know, we're not want to end up at the end of this life and go, I waste up, you know. What do all the criminals say? Sorry. I'm so sorry. Yeah, you will be, but it's too late. It don't matter. You're there. Well, if you've purified it, you have. Right? So you have to check your own mind. If you've just got a really scattered mind that goes, oh, I said, oh, I forgot. Oh, but yeah, I did.
But it could also be that, so how we purify the remedy part might just have to be bigger so that you have an equally powerful action that overlays the negative action. And so then you won't be flipping back to, by habit, we go back to our negativity, you'll be flipping back to doing a positive thing.
Well, it's coming right up.
Yeah.
So,
leading question.
This is the thing. So how do you have confidence in the purification? Well, this is the thing. You've got to do things like this, sit here and talk about it. And so what do you not have confidence in? You did the practice, you did the purification practice. Why are you not confident about this? You know how the action was made up. You got, the action had four parts. Your purification practice had four parts, so the complete opposites to them. They were the opposites of them. What's the problem?
Yeah, this is just really like, just get with the program.
Yeah.
Make sure you do all four, and
It's like this one here, they got crossed out with this one, right? Can't work. This one here got crossed out with that one. Can't work. This one got, all parts of the action got crossed out. The result can't, you don't have a cause for the effect. So, yeah, it just takes a bit of, we've got to, but like you're saying, Ben, you've got to check your own mind. Like, what's my mind doing? And like Michelle was saying, you know, good thing. It's like, if it keeps going up like this, well, what's the remedy? What did you do in recompense? Because if you really did that well, it's done.
And, I mean, especially for repetitive things like that, so then maybe part of the remedy has to be a repetitive thing, so that instead of going back to the rumination, you go back to, say, reciting mantras or reciting a short sutra, so that the rumination energy goes on a remedy.
And so you got the Tibetans, I read this Tibetans thing I read, and I thought, that's so true. He said, the Westerners all focus on the bad things that they've done, where the Tibetans all focus on the good things they've done. They all focus on the remedies, and they're really happy. Now we are the other way. So we're sort of like, guilty, 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 guilty. That's right, yeah. And it's just different cultural thing. Now, so suppose we've done the purification, we have to have like, be confident that we've done it. So from that arises a sense of joy. Joy just sweeps you along. Really, joy is like this, we need joy. Joy will keep us engaged in the practice. Despair and guilt won't. Despair and guilt is eye-focused. And you just cripple yourself. Well, that's no good. Another thing, always, like I said, again, this is emptiness, right? There is no natural existence of an I. A you. So like I said before, when you look for yourself within the body and mind that it created this action, You're not going to find yourself there. Because you're not there. Like I said, even the action of purification, like, where is it? I mean, like, carried out, for sure, you know, we did it. But, like, so how does it exist then? Because you can't find it anywhere, can you? It's not non-existent, it does exist in mere name. But it doesn't have any real, true existence. There's no substantial existence of a purifying act. And just this true deed, you know, there's no, like I said, it's just not there. It doesn't truly exist. But it does exist conventionally, independently, and, you know, we did it. And we are just named on this body and mind. So we've got to keep that sort of in mind all the time. We've got to bring the wisdom in with the method. So that, Tibetan, you know, so and the other thing with the Westerners, what we really focus on is the deeds. What can I do? What can I do? The major deeds you want to remember is remorse and restraint. The promise, don't do it again. You can just do those two. Without those two, though, it's not done. Especially the remorse. And here's this other thing, right? So even when you do purification, you are creating merit. But one of the simplest ways to recollect this is that remember your virtue. Like I said, when we do bad, it's all we do. We flip over, we just remember our non-virtue. Well, remembering non-virtue, the only use of remembering non-virtue is to purify it.
So we're so bad at this that, like, even just rejoice, apart from a bad Christmas carol, like, what on earth does that mean? It took me ages till Geshe's over said, just delight,
yeah.
Taking delight. And then the light bulb went on, oh, now I know what you mean.
So, you know, you do good things. You're not always running around stealing or doing bad stuff. In fact, most of the time you're not. Right? But we seem to forget that. It's that biological imperative. Let's focus on the negative. I always remember that. But you've done 100 times good things and bad things. So we've got to remember that, you know. We're here because of virtue. We are human beings because of virtue. And that's the whole thing, you know. We want to be human again. If we're not enlightened, we need to be human beings. Primary cause for human beings is virtue. It's not the only cause, but without virtue, you're not going to be reborn as a human being. So yeah, we've got to delight in it, the fact that, you know, we've had enough virtue to be here, and we can create some more, and we are. So we've got to remember it. We've run into teachers who are virtuous people, encouraging us to be virtuous people. This is Holiness, Khenpo Rinpoche, Geshe Sopa, Lama Zopa, there's heaps of them. A lot of people out there, even in the world, ordinary beings who are decent. And most people, if you look at them, in the vast majority of their lives, they're good. They do good things. It's only occasionally, when they're really pressured, they do the bad thing. So, you know, we've got to remind ourselves of this and get uplifted, a joyous mind, happy mind. And what that leads us into gratitude. So always be grateful to be still alive, because you can do so much with your life while you're alive. Can't do anything when you're dead, right? There's what karma and delusion is going to take you along and drive you into a rebirth state, and you have to start again. But while you're alive, you have the chance to really make your life meaningful and useful. So here we are alive, we have the leisure and opportunity to engage in this spiritual way of being, which is good now, good in the middle, and be good later on too. So this picture here was taken. I'm just thinking. There's a lot of Brisbane people here. So this was at the Great Stupa, 2011, I think.
In Bendigo.
So a lot of people from Jim Rizik Institute there. Yeah. So, you know, so we have purpose. A lot of people don't. we can create meaning in our lives. We should reach. Yeah, it's just amazing to be alive. And it's sort of thing, you think about how many people are dead. Right? It's like, whoa. And here we are, we're not. And so like this, you know, you should be happy, grateful. Grateful to be alive, grateful to be able to see something. Now, while we are alive, and on the best means of protecting ourselves from doing something silly is to be patient. So why be patient? To protect your virtue. Because it's when you become impatient, you blow it.
So in a way, the more stressed we get, the more patient we should try and be.
Yeah.
And then we won't panic and do something stupid.
Yeah, so we watched, we went, Miffy and I went off to see the Black Panther movie.
Forever,
right? So one of the big things that jumped out to me, I kept saying to Miffy, just shows you how silly you can be with grief and anger. Do not make decisions when you're grieving or you're angry. Because you act impatiently, you don't have patience.
And
terrible things happen.
Yeah, it's such a distorted view that
No good
can come out of it.
Yeah, this is lack of patience.
Being patient would make a bad movie.
Well, you could be clever if you could have most of the movie about why we need patience, and then right at the end you could come to it. Otherwise, yeah, we could just have a movie of everyone just smiling. Would you pay money for that?
So, for those online, do you guys have any final questions at all?
Funnily enough, Rachel said, ha ha ha, I can't write my notes fast enough. But that's because Rachel's just started leading our budgets up for meditations, and this is like the ultimate class for that.
Okay, so what's our takeaway? And it's true, right? Especially with karma, your future does depend entirely on the actions you take now. Whether you're going to purify past actions or create positive future actions. It's up to each one of us. So you know that there are four opponent powers, right? And you hopefully will take away knowing that this one does this, this one does this, and so forth. That way you can see, wow, that's how the power of the action is actually broken down. It's what we're calling the purifying it. You take away its power. Ah, yeah, that's what I think. Yeah, otherwise, you know, there's so much material spent on in the Buddha Dharmas talking about how things exist, how suffering exists. And the idea is that, yeah, but if you know how it works, you can break it down because it's dependent arising. It's dependent upon cause and conditions. You interrupt them, you're not going to get the normal effects. That's how it works in the ordinary world, and that's how it works with karma. The same thing, they're just actions. So there's some material up online, as you can see here. So we've got the FPMT notes, and we've got page 43, 47 to 51, 55 to 64. And there's some pages from LTC that we've put up there. It's 59 to 64, or 1 to 6, 68 to 69, and 10 to 11, 41 to 47. And next week we'll do the review, and after that will be a rebirth game.
Yep, that's karma in action.
That's right, we're going to carry out some actions. So, please, rejoice. Be happy that you were here tonight. You heard the material, you've been thinking about it, you might even be able to put it into action. That's a good thing. So, let's take that good thing and use it for the benefit of others. So we're going to dedicate it now, understanding that what we are dedicating, this merit, exists in mere name because it exists dependently and has no true existence. So due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. And now the supreme jewel, bodhicitta, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore, and as long as space endures, as long as sentient beings abide, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world.